Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
So here are the criminals in Black Lives Matter chanting just hours after a lone gunman shot a 47-year-old Harris County Sheriff's Deputy Darren Goforth in the back of the head while he was getting gas. These low-life criminals were chanting, "Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. Stop the coming civil war. Stop the coming civil war that Obama has started. Obama has declared war on the middle class. He's declared war especially on the military. Took care of that internationally. Then he moved on to taking a war stance against the white police in America, who are the only line we have between the low-life rabble who would eat you for breakfast. They'd roast you alive if there were no police. They'd break your house open, steal everything you have, rape your wife, and steal every possession you have. Make no mistake about it, this is a revolution going on right in front of your eyes. But because you didn't read it in the newspaper, it's not happening. Because it wasn't on the evening news, it's not happening. So a reporter was shot by a black man. Reporters just doing their job. No rioting, no signs saying White Lives Matter. No demands for gay flags to come down. No blaming the black community. No social justice messages. No, because as we all know, every mature, rational, logical, thinking adult knows that the suspect and the suspect himself was responsible for his actions and is accountable. And he was probably insane. But I can't say the same for the man who shot the cop in the back of the head. He was doing it under direct orders of his own brain. And the thought that he could get away with it didn't come from his own brain, did it? As I showed you with the sound bites we played, it started over a year ago with Obama, Holder, Sharpton, Farrakhan, de Blasio, and others saying that the police basically are the problem. And in fact, one of them even saying, go out and kill them, point blank. The shooter who killed a Texas cop unleashed 15 shots at close range. He emptied the entire clip of his .40 caliber pistol and another bullet loaded in the chambers. He stood over the dead cop, according to Harris County DA Devon Anderson. Shannon Miles was arraigned for capital murder on the shooting of Deputy Darren Goforth, 47. His mama already said that he didn't do it. His mama already said he was home with her. He couldn't have done it, even though they have ballistics evidence traced to his gun with the bullets that were found in the sheriff's deputy and many other pieces of evidence connecting him directly to the crime. Black Lives Spatter disrupted a Minnesota State Fair. Black Lives Spatter disrupt Minnesota State Fair is my headline. They called for frying pigs at Minnesota State Fair. How much more can this country take under this revolutionary communist in the White House? How much longer can we take it is the question I ask. And what is the reaction going to be, and when will it happen? Why won't the Republicans stand up for the police? Why isn't that one voice in the American political system speaking out for the police who are now being targeted by these criminals? I haven't heard the Republican Party say one word. I haven't heard John Boehner call for a special prayer in Congress. I guess they're on vacation. I don't know where they are. Not one word from the White House. Now, how long do you think this will go on until finally there is a civil war in the United States of America? A year ago, I published a book called Stop the Coming Civil War. But Obama started the civil war. He started it with rhetoric. All wars start with rhetoric. Obama declared war on white police. Obama declared war on the middle class. Obama started this war. And somebody has to stop this maniac before it turns into a full-blown, insane shootout in the United States of America. Obama, Holder, Sharpton, de Blasio, and others, they're the ones who gave it a wink-wink, nod-nod, go out and kill police. They did it with their mouths. You tell me that they're not responsible for the epidemic of cop killings in the United States of America. Nobody will hold Obama responsible for what he did. Nobody. Now, there's a Texas sheriff who happens to be African-American who said the White House and Department of Justice, that would be Eric Holder, started open season on the American police. Listen to clip number three on the Savage Nation. Listen.
I am too pissed off tonight to be diplomatic about what's going on, and I'm not going to stick my head in the sand about it. I said last December that war had been declared on the American police officer led by some high-profile people, one of them coming out of the White House, one coming out of the United States Department of Justice. And it's open season right now. There's no doubt about it.
And that's right. It's open season started by Obama. Now you understand the long march that has led to the execution of police, white police, specifically by black men, an epidemic now in the United States of America. There is an outright war on white police. See, Obama is this slick architect of all of it. He never says it, but he uses the thug, Al Sharpton, to go out. And look, Sharpton was in and out of the White House 100 times. So he goes in and he tells him what to go out and say. And then he makes believe that he has clean hands. He has no clean hands. So a deputy was shot in the back of the head as he was pumping gas by a black, low-life, cowardly thug. Empties his gun, 15 shots, not one word from the White House. Now let's go back a week. France. Three brave American off-duty military guys, one black, by the way, subdue an Islamist, beat him up, stop him from executing people on a train. Even the socialist president of France, Hollande, gave these men France's highest honor, the Legion d'Honneur. While your president, your lousy president, your divisive, revolutionary, Marxist president, has not yet said one word about those men, those brave men. He has not said one word of sympathy to the family. He has not called for the end of the killing of police by black radicals. He is behind it as sure as I'm standing here. Now, you have to understand how this all works. I laid awake in bed and I said, this is all part of his master plan. And remember, I wrote Stop the Coming Civil War. He has neutralized the military by decapitating the active leadership of the military. He has only yes girls running the military. And that includes the men who are left. He has fired any general that would have stood up to him. He has gotten rid of any admiral who could have blown the whistle on Benghazi. He has decapitated the military the same way Stalin did, the same way every other dictator did. Except in dictatorships, they just shot them. Here, they smear them and fire them. But make no mistake about it, this very dangerous revolutionary Marxist in the White House has deballed our military, and that is why they're not fighting the war against ISIS. That's number one. So he lets ISIS rage across the Middle East, and in America, he releases the mobs on the white police in order to corral them and keep them, because they are the only ones who could possibly stand up to what he has coming and what he has in mind. If you actually think that this dangerous revolutionary Marxist in the White House is simply going to go quietly into the night in 2016, you are crazy. You are mistaken. He has much more damage ahead for this country. I warn you. He has deballed the police, he has deballed the military, and he's doing it all so that we, the people, are backed into a corner. That's one man's opinion. This is a federal plot to take over the police force, to federalize all local police forces, because they are largely white policemen. This is all about racism from Barack Obama, who is clearly the most racist president you could ever imagine, occupying the highest office in the land. And if you think I'm the only one saying it, well, I really don't care if I'm the only one saying it. But I won't be the only one saying it tomorrow. Because millions of you understand that what I just said to you is 100% true. Very serious stuff. Not easy to do. Very depressing. But if no one in the media is willing to stand up for the police, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to stop until somebody says that the killing of the police must stop. It was started by Obama, Holder, Sharpton, Farrakhan, de Blasio, in my opinion, one man's opinion. This did not happen in a vacuum. War was declared on the American police officer by these people, in my estimation. It went on and on and on, and now they're killing them. Not one word in the media. I didn't see one story. Not one story. And when I turn on radio, I want to throw up. Why, them Republicans? Why, if they want to win in 2016, why, I tell you, it's them Dems. And now I have something to tell you about something else, but it's them Republicans. Oh, yeah. No, them Democrats are no good. No, I tell you, them Republicans are real good. We have a special guest on, a regular Republican. We're never going to have those evil Democrats on. Oh, yes. That's what you want to hear on radio? This media must be used to stop the epidemic of violence against the police and to arrest Black Lives Matter, because they are not protesting. They are killing. Their words are killing. I believe in the First Amendment. I live by it. But when you call for killing police and police get killed, that's not yelling fire in a crowded theater. That's yelling kill police in a crowded nation. That's filth. That's slime. Listen to Sheriff Clark in clip number 5. And see if he disagrees with me. 5.
The President of the United States started this war on police. Look, you can't say anything you want in the United States of America. You cannot threaten people's lives. You can't call for the killing of people like we're seeing from some of these things. That is not First Amendment protection. That is protected. That is filth. That is slime. And, you know, there are some law enforcement implications that can be done with the Department of Justice and with state attorney's offices across the United States. I love the First Amendment. I love freedom of speech. You are not free to threaten my life or anybody else's.
That is 100% right. And we the people must stand up for the thin blue line. You better stand up for the thin blue line or the street thugs are coming for you. And so we see what's going on. Graduating to treason. Graduating to treason. And that was the opening question to my book, Stop the Coming Civil War. And I asked you a question. By asking a question in a statement, rather, I said, people can justify a government's controversial policies and actions for only so long until they see a pattern of abuse of power. Then even the most devout supporters of any regime must decide if they support these extreme policies and actions or oppose them. With the current government under Barack Obama, this point of no return was reached for some when they slowly realized the extent of the vast National Security Agency spying scandal. For others, it was the release of known Islamist terrorists from the Gitmo prison without congressional knowledge. For most Americans, the flood of tens of thousands of illegal immigrants from Central America, purposely created by the administration to overwhelm our southern borders, was the final straw. Still other supporters kept justifying one extremist act after another, justifying the president's policies and actions with rationalizations that included saying that those who opposed them were, quote, right-wing conspirators, racists, Obama haters, and the like. Yet for those of us who study governments that have taken nations from freedom to fascism, the handwriting has been on the wall for many years. My question is this. Will the Obama inner circle of extremist left-wing radicals trigger an event that will provoke an American insurrection, even a civil war? That's the opening to stop the coming civil war. I rest my case. I'll be back in a minute.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Talking about Obama's war on police and how police are being killed across America, namely white police by black thugs. That's right, it's an epidemic. It's going on. And someone has to say something. And we have to say that all lives matter, not just black lives matter. No, all lives do matter. And we've also got to stand up against the thugs in the Black Lives Matter crowd and understand that many of them are hateful, murderous thugs. And there's a difference between free speech and calling for the murder of police. When they chant pigs in a blanket, frying like bacon. When the Black Panthers are threatening Texas cops, we will start creeping up on you in the darkness, and the president does nothing. Then you know that it's he and Sharpton who have conspired to see this day arise in the United States of America. And again, I try to warn you what was coming a year ago with Stop the Coming Civil War. I warned you, and if you think that Obama's going to go away quietly in the night, you are a dreamer. You're a real dreamer if you think that this revolutionary communist is going to just simply hand the reins over to Donald Trump. You must be kidding. There's an awful lot of time left for this man to do mischief. And mischief is what he is all about. He will not rest until America is broken, until every avenue of protest is snuffed out. This man is behind it all as sure as I'm sitting here. You say, well, how can you prove that? Well, you put two and two together. Al Sharpton is Barack Obama in a jumpsuit. Al Sharpton is Barack Obama without the smoothness. That's why he took that street thug in and out of the White House secretly 100 times over the last few years to tell him exactly what to say that he himself could not say. This is how it works. He was sent out to make sure there was a war on police, in my opinion. Then there's Holder, now enjoying a multi-million dollar lifestyle as a lawyer. After wrecking America's peace and harmony, he went back to a law firm. Then there's de Blasio, still ruining New York. Then there's Louis Farrakhan, who asked openly a week ago for men to go out and kill police. He said it. Not one word from the White House at the time. My friends, you're in the middle of a civil war. It was started when this communist street agitator was sworn in, and it's only just begun. Not since the run-up to the civil war have we as a country been more divided. The battle lines have been drawn, and Barack Obama is the general of the opposition to our way of life. That's my opinion. Where is the media? Where is the Republican Party on the execution of a white cop filling a gas tank in Texas, executed by a black criminal, cowardly walked up behind him, shot him in the back of the head, and then emptied his gun 15 shots as he lay on the ground. 15 shots. Obama started this war on police through his dangerous anti-police rhetoric. This maniac has to be impeached for treason. He must be impeached. Of course, we will not get the votes required, but it will start the national dialogue, and he will be exposed for what he really is. That's my opinion. I think you are all as upset as I am about the so-called Black Lives Matter phonies. This is an anti-white, anti-cop organization who, if they are not called out for who they are, calling for frying pigs in a blanket, etc., more cops will die. And eventually there'll be a reaction that you do not want in this country. On a district of southern Damascus, in which they conquered parts of the district and brought ISIS forces close to the Syrian capital, is expected to accelerate the Russian military intervention. They're not going to let Assad fall, no matter what Obama does to facilitate his fall. They said this is a red line that cannot be crossed. And by the way, if Russia intervenes militarily in this way, Russia will be the first country from outside the Middle East to send ground forces into the Syrian civil war. Very big development. Enormous development. Very big development. Now, here's what's even more interesting. On August 18th, six of Russia's advanced MiG-31 Foxhound interceptor aircraft landed at the Syrian Air Force's Mezi Air Base, which is the military section of Damascus International Airport. And right after the Russian fighters landed, they were immediately followed by giant Russian Antonov AN-124 Condor cargo planes carrying 1,000 of Russia's S-9M-133 Cornet anti-tank missiles, 1,000 of the most advanced anti-tank missiles that Russia has. Number two, before the Russian jets landed in Damascus, Moscow reached an agreement with Washington, for the removal of NATO's Patriot missile batteries from Turkey. Now, why would that be done? Why would Moscow insist that Obama remove NATO Patriot missiles in Turkey? Because they were afraid that Turkey could fire the missiles at Russian fighters carrying out operations in Syrian airspace. This is a big, big story, and it's going to develop over the next week. Very big story to put ground troops, jet aircraft, anti-tank missiles to support Assad, who, in my opinion, Obama is trying to overthrow by permitting ISIS to run wild across the Middle East. Now, on the face of it, what's interesting here is that the U.S. is cooperating with Russia by removing encouraging NATO to remove the Patriot missiles. Okay. But which side is Washington really on? Is it on the side of ISIS or on the side of Assad? That's the only question there is with regard to this humanitarian nightmare that has emerged because of Obama's meddling and the Arab Spring ignited by none other than Hillary email Clinton. Never forget, those emails contain info on the Arab Spring, which has blown up the world. Another topic I want to talk about is a dumb basketball dribbler by the name of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, whose real name is Lou Alcindor, who became a black Muslim at some point in his evolution. This dumb basketball dribbler is suddenly an expert on the news. He became Einstein. After spending his whole life throwing balls around on a wooden floor and aiming for hoops, he is now a political scientist. He attacked Trump, and he called Trump an enemy of the Constitution, and he called Bernie Sanders a wonderful sharp man. Now, what's interesting here is that this Einstein fears an American nationalist like Trump, but supports a weakling anti-American socialist like Sanders, as you would expect. Do I need to say any more? Iran devils get their deal, says the Daily News. The die is cast, they write, President, oh, shameful, will ram his Iranian nuclear deal through Congress despite majority opposition in both the House and Senate. Now what? Worry a lot, they write. Although the fight is lost, the Senate owes the people an up or down vote on one of the most consequential foreign policy agreements in decades. Obama says he has boxed the Iranians so tightly that they have no chance of expanding a greatly reduced nuclear program in the short run, and that he or a future president could snap back economic sanctions should the Iranians go rogue. Thus, he argues, America will be better positioned to curb Iran for the 15-year life of the pact. They write that his positions are based on faith and hope, two virtues that are misplaced when risking utter catastrophe, quite probably triggering an arms race in the Middle East and leaving Israel under the shadow of a mushroom cloud. At the same time, the terror-exporting radical Islamist regime in Iran will gain economic strength, becoming still more capable of waging not-so-covert warfare in the Middle East. I can pause right there because it's the limit of your attention span. The article is quite much longer, but I know the attention span of a pigeon is the average attention span of a radio listener, especially days before Labor Day weekend, when we have so many more important things to do. Car rides, barbecues. I don't know what else we're going to do. I'm going away. I'm going somewhere. I don't want to sit here and cook a hot dog by myself on a barbecue grill, just me and the dog. The fact is that Obama is a liar. He's a serial liar. He has lied to U.S. citizens without apology. He has stepped on the Constitution. He has destroyed race relations. He has attacked Republicans, telling Hispanics to punish them. He has abandoned our allies. He has appeased tyrants. He is coddling adversaries. He is using the Crusades as an excuse for inaction as Islamist terrorists slaughter their way and rape their way across the Middle East. And now Obama has finally put the knife in our only real ally and the sole representative of Western civilization in the Middle East, a little nation called Israel. Just look at how he has sat on his hands while ISIS has been taking over the Middle East. Look how he's thrown away all of the dead boys who died in Iraq and Afghanistan, all the gains thrown in the toilet. Look how he has crippled our military. Look how he has crippled our foreign policy. Look how he has weakened our economy by printing money. You think the economy is doing well? Are you sure? Your health insurance will be up hundreds of dollars a month. Hundreds of dollars a month. Yes, indeed. I guess Obama will soon socialize car insurance and tell you that it's car care coming next. Everything he touches goes up in smoke. The question is, why is America asleep? Why? Why are Islamist extremists being coddled? Why is Islam being imported into the United States? Why? Because he promised to fundamentally transform America. And he is in the process of altering not only America, but the entire planet to his perverse vision of rule by a Stone Age totalitarian theocracy. As I said, if I were a psychiatrist, I would tell you that this diagnosis is critical. He is a psychopath by any definition. But since most Americans don't know the difference between psychopathology and their own pathologies, There's no point in talking about it. So anyway, look, it's Thursday, it's Labor Day weekend. What do you care about Iran, a nuclear bomb? Bless it. And what do you care if Israel disappears? Big deal. Just a bunch of greedy Jews. Let them pack their valises and move to Los Angeles, right? What do you care if Obama floods America with Muslim? What do you care if the churches become mosques? I mean, it was done in Turkey, where the greatest cathedral in the world became a mosque. So what's the difference? What do you care about anything? What do you care if America becomes like Mexico, a totalitarian third world banana republic run by narco terrorists? What do you care? What do you care? Just keep driving your car. Hey, look at the new cars out there. Look at the colors of the shirts you can buy. Go on a cruise, too. Take a nice cruise as a result of your wonderful work all your life. Throwing away the legacy that you inherited. What do you care about any of it for? Isn't that the new modality of America? Care about nothing? Isn't that the mark of the intelligent man and woman, to care about nothing? Is that not the mark of the atheist? There's no God. There's no judgment. Weren't you told for 40 years by the radical lesbian feminists not to be judgmental? Sure. So now that you're not judgmental, they're throwing Christians in jail who won't grant marriage licenses. They're pretty judgmental. You're not supposed to be judgmental, but the radical lesbian feminists are quite judgmental, aren't they? How'd that happen? How did it happen? Because you don't see things for what they are. It's called sleight of hand. The problem for them is that there's some of us out here, and a lot of us, who can see the sleight of hand, and it's not so slight. So what's the hope? A lot of hope. Yeah, right, a lot of hope. A lot of hope. Now, Trump signs the loyalty oath with Priebus, that milquetoast of the Republican Party, and I don't like it. I don't know what that really means. It seems like a peace treaty between the old line Republican gangsters and Donald, saying, look, we won't attack you if you agree that if you're not nominated by our gang, you will not turn against us and run as a third party candidate. They sort of neutralized each other. It's a little worrisome. The previous is about the perfect man to be the stooge of Obama. There's no two-party system. It's a one-party system. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. I was watching a documentary on India and the economy of India. And you may have read this years ago. The elephant that became a tiger. India. Now, we know India was booming. It's a little slow now. But I was fascinated to see how poverty went down and literacy went up in two decades, and how the cities of India boomed, and I didn't understand what had happened till I watched this documentary. Here's what happened. After the British left India, and I think it was 1947, as a result of the nonviolent Mahatma Gandhi, the guy with the diaper and the cane, the wood stick. I'm just giving you a caricature. Gandhi, the guy with the diaper and the wood stick. He used nonviolence to drive the British out. So everyone cheered, yay, nonviolence works. Well, one of the first things that happens was the Muslims rioted, wanted all of India. The Hindus fought back. There was a war. So the peaceful man in the diaper made a decision, and he decided to carve out a new nation for the Muslims. And on the march to the Muslim nation, a million people died. Hindu and Muslim killed each other. That's a little side effect of the separation. So then the Muslims got their own nation, and they still weren't happy. Now they're still trying to take India apart. But let's put that aside for a minute, just for a minute. What actually freed the Indian economy? So right after the British leave, what they leave in place? They left a gigantic bureaucracy. The British were great bureaucrats. They were fabulous government workers. They created great government infrastructure that was a fundamentally socialist infrastructure. And the Indians inherited it. So people said, wow, now that the British are gone, we're going to do something new. Well, guess what happened? The minute Indians took over the roles of the British, they not only didn't get rid of the infrastructure where the government ruled everything, they expanded it. They expanded the socialist infrastructure that the British had left them, and they became even more dictatorial. And things froze. Poverty increased after the British left. Starvation increased after the British left. Disease increased after the British left because localized government, that was really centralized socialist government, could not manage the country. And then a miracle occurred. Somewhere along the way, I think it was in the 1990s when reforms began, and India abandoned the socialism that they had created in as a copy, a carbon copy, but worse of the British. And once they got rid of socialism, what is socialism? Let's make it simple. Let's say you own a house in America or even an apartment and you want to build something. How many different permits do you have to apply for? That's socialism. Every time you apply for a license or a permit, you're facing a socialist bureaucrat. I live in various areas around the country. One of them is Marin County. It's perhaps the most impossible place on earth to do anything because the socialist bureaucracy is crippling. To put up a fence, 10 morons have to sign off on it. 10 morons, permits, licenses, idiot morons. So people don't build as much as they would. It cripples growth in every way imaginable. Everyone knows this except the socialists in Marin County, New York City, and Washington. So in India, they abandoned the licensing and the permit process in 1991. They got rid of their socialism, and they adopted economic reforms that converted the once lumbering elephant into the Asian tiger that we know it to be. Why? Now, they were warned by this communist socialist then, just as Obama and the phonies warn you now, that India would suffer a lost decade of growth if they got rid of this kind of constrictive socialism. The Indian people were warned that opening up the nation would allow multinationals to crush Indian companies. And fiscal stringency, meaning no more printing of money, no more government programs, would strangle social spending and safety nets, hitting poor people and regions. Does it sound familiar to you? Does it sound just like Hillary Clinton's policies? Well, there you go. But guess what happened? Indian businesses not only held their own, they became multinationals themselves. Booming revenue from fast growth financed a boom that has never been seen in India's history. Why? Because the people were free to do as they felt was best to build a business and make a profit. In other words, the free market worked. The absolute opposite of what this fraud doing an Alaskan dance is telling us. Everything this liar-in-chief tells you is backwards from the real-world experience. The man is stuck in the doxies of the 1960s. This is a madman running America. A madman who doesn't even know what world history has taught us. Nothing. So there's your little mini lesson on what socialism is. When you hear the word socialist, you don't know what it means. You don't know. Your images come to your mind. I'm a pictographic performer. So when I say socialist to you, think of the bureaucrat in your town or city who you have to go to put a deck on your house, or to put a road sign in front of your house, or to add a room to your house. That's socialism. I'm Michael Savage, anti-socialist. I'll be right back.
Of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
This is as good of a signpost of what we're dealing with when it comes to climate change as just about anything. This is one of the most studied glaciers because it's so easily accessible. But what it indicates, because of the changing patterns of winters with less snow, longer, hotter summers, is how rapidly the glacier is receding.
So there he is again. Now pushing the lie about global warming again to see what he can rake out of the economy before he leaves for his friends who make billions of dollars in industries surrounding the anti-fossil fuel mania. There is more money right now in solar than there is in heroin. There is more money now in this than there was in drugs. And don't think that criminals have not gone into the solar business. I can't be specific because I still have a number of years left on the earth that I respect. God has given me to help disseminate the truth, but I've never seen anything like this. This man's mania for lies and to pull the wool over people's eyes is so shocking. The climate change lie is one of the greatest lies in history. So he goes there and he sees a glacier that's melting. And he says that here's a post marked 1926. And there's a post reading 1951. And shows that the glacier is retreating. And what this community organizer didn't learn in the gutters of Chicago as he was organizing the rabble to get into his first office is that ice has been retreating for thousands of years. He didn't learn that in the gutters of Chicago from Saul Alinsky. He didn't learn a lot of things. And I guess he didn't even learn the basics that they teach a kid in the third grade. You see, Mr. Obama, when ice warms above 32 degrees Fahrenheit for any length of time, it actually melts. You understand how that works? You see how that works? And Mr. Obama, do you understand that we understand that this is a big lie? We know that 15,000 years ago there was a glacier that covered all of North America. And it's been retreating ever since. Mr. Obama, please study some basic science and you will see a phase in climate called the Little Ice Age. Did you know about the Little Ice Age and what happened in Europe and North America? Of course, your ancestors weren't here, nor were mine. The Native Americans were here. And they have historical records of the Little Ice Age when they all almost froze to death. And what happened after the Little Ice Age is the ice started to melt. It began around 1440 AD. And there was no industrialization at that time. And so there was a Little Ice Age, you see, that's why. And the fact of the matter is, well, now we're through another warming phase. It's another warming phase, and that's what we're living through. Which is not to argue for pollution. I mean, I've been fighting pollution and trying to save rainforests for 30, 40 years. So don't put me in the category of being a polluter. I just like the truth. You see, also, Mr. Obama, if you study any history of the Vikings, you will learn this, and it's not in Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. The Vikings settled Greenland when it was green. That's why it was called Greenland. And they did farming and raised livestock. And Mr. Obama, again, you didn't find this in the tractates of Karl Marx, but when the Vikings settled Greenland, there was a period between the year 600 and 800 AD. And then what happened, Mr. Obama, is the mini ice age occurred from about the mid-1300s to the mid-1800s. And Greenland became covered with ice. And do you know what usually follows an ice age, Mr. Obama? I'm sure you know this. It's called warming, a warming age. And the reason you are able to screw the world with this big lie along with the bouncer from Rome who's coming here to do more on this is because people are stupid. They're not learning basic science. They're idiots. They're uneducated dolts, which is how a man like you could become president to begin with and get away with what you've been getting away with. The people are stupid. They know nothing about ice. They know nothing about warming. They know nothing about when ice melts. They know nothing about history. They know nothing about geography, nothing about geology, and they don't care. All they care is that you go up there in your billion-dollar airplane with your entourage spewing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and take a boat ride spewing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and lecture the world. You phony, you! And this is the world you live in because of a community organizer like this. This is the savage nation, what sad times we live in. That a con man like this, a man as thin as this intellectually, can march around the globe doing so much damage, including the damage of promoting a fraud like this in open daylight. And of course, Obama is a maniac in the sense that he has no limitation on what damage he wants to do to this nation to bring it to its knees. So he goes up there, changes the name of a mountain to an indigenous name in order to get the people up there who don't vote to, first of all, buy into his lie about fossil fuels, which supplies a good number of jobs and income to the indigenous people. So he changes the name of the mountain in order to sway them to his false viewpoint. Nobody told this community organizer, apparently, about the ice ages when he was at Columbia. He was too busy reading Karl Marx and Saul Alinsky. There have been five ice ages that we know of dating back as far as 850 million years ago. The last one was in the Pliocene Quaternary era, which began about 2.5 million years ago, Mr. Obama, and it ended 10,000 years ago. And Mr. Obama, I know you didn't read this in Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, But in these five ice ages, there was an in-between period. And in between all of these ice ages, Mr. Obama, the Earth was warming for thousands of years before it began to cool again. And you know, Mr. Obama, what happens during the warming periods? The ice sheets melt and sea levels rise. Mr. Obama, I know you didn't study this at Columbia, but I think your daughters are probably learning that in the seventh grade. Also, Mr. Obama, something that you didn't learn at Columbia is that when glaciers recede, what you find are tree stumps. What does that mean, Mr. Obama? Now, kind of put your thinking cap on, not your rhetoric cap. Put on your thinking cap, Mr. Obama. When glaciers recede, you see tree stumps. What does that mean? It means that not long ago, the glacier was in a similar stage as now, without global warming caused by any anthropogenic source. Shall I go on, Mr. Liar-in-Chief, trying to con the world into this? I'll go on. Mr. Obama, you didn't learn this while you were at Columbia University, but in the 1500s, the Vatican and 97% of the scientists in the 1500s, the Vatican, oh, wait till he comes here, the bouncer from Rome. Wait until Rome sends their bouncer around the world. The Vatican and 97% of the scientists in the 1500s said the Earth is the center of the universe, Mr. Obama. In the 1960s, while you were, I guess, a young man or young student, we were told, beware the coming ice age. It was in the front of Time magazine. In the 1970s, the moron, Jimmy Carter, said the world will run out of fossil fuel in the next decade. That's Jimmy Carter. In the 1980s, we were warned that we were all going to die of skin cancer because of the hole in the ozone layer. In the 1990s, we were told that at the turn of the millennium, all the computers in the world will fail and send the world into chaos. In the 2000s, Al Corleone came along and made a fortune saying, beware global warming. In 2010s, we were warned climate change will create monster storms and weather anomalies that are going to destroy the world. Mr. Obama, look back, because in the 1880s, there was a very wise man named P.T. Barnum who wrote, there is a sucker born every minute. Also, Mr. Obama, you may not have read this in your years as a community organizer using a staple gun on bulletin boards around Chicago, but 15,000 years ago, Mr. Obama, there was a glacier that covered all of North America. Are we to blame the Industrial Revolution for its demise? Or do you know, Mr. Obama, that 10,000 years ago, the land that you live in was buried in over 300 feet of ice? And it's all gone just because of those stupid mastodons passing gas. If only Al Gore and O'Dummy were around, then this might have been prevented. They could have stopped this from happening. They could have, I guess, interned the mastodons. And they could have told them to stop eating carbon-based plants. And then him and Al Gore and O'Dummy would scratch their heads and they could have saved the world. And we would still have 300 feet of ice over North America. Now, I want to go on to the next one. Today, John Kerry gave a long intellectual speech on why we should give Iran the bomb while saying we're doing this to make sure they don't get the bomb. And it was interesting. I didn't listen to the whole thing. It became boring. And I watched him and I got agitated because I saw him lying. His eyes become shaded. His eyes become shadowy. I remember him throwing his Vietnam-era medals over the wall and joining the anti-American protesters. I remember what an evil man John Kerry really is, what a slimy creature he really is. But let's put aside my distaste for this pack of left-wing fanatics that are ruining America and the world. And let's look at the words themselves. Let you liberals who listen to me, because you know secretly you agree with most of what I say, even though you say I don't agree with you, I'm going to give you an example of how John Kerry gave away why he and Obama, mainly Obama, has appeased and capitulated to the mullahs in Tehran in clip number 2 on the Savage Nation.
My friends, it just doesn't make sense to conclude that we should vote no now because of what might happen in 15 years, thereby guaranteeing that what might happen in 15 years will actually begin to happen now. Because if this agreement is rejected, every possible reason for worry in the future would have to be confronted now, immediately.
Stop. Stop. Listen to what John Kerry just gave away. Somebody put a poison pill in his speech. His speechwriter actually gave away the big lie. He said if the agreement is rejected with Iran, every possible reason for worry in the future would have to be confronted now. That's precisely why it should be confronted now. This is precisely why Iran should be confronted now, when they are relatively weak. They know that. And the appeasing cowards in the Obama administration have capitulated to the worst terrorist nation on the earth exactly for that reason. They're passing the buck to future generations of leadership. They're selling us out to Iran now. The Obama-Iran axis of evil has just been exposed for what they really are. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Life is good, people are wonderful, and business is great. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We live in such depressing times that when you hear an optimist like Donald Trump, it lifts your spirits. I mean, listen to what I just said to you. The others are so depressing to listen to. And I hear the standard attacks on Donald Trump. Now, standard operating procedure is to say this and that about Trump, and I hear the same repeated lies over and over again. And I'm a champion of Trump. I'll be very honest with you. I like the man. I've only met him a few times personally. Full disclosure, I'm a member of the Mar-a-Lago Country Club that he owns in Florida, but I don't go there. I go to Florida about a week a year. I go to the club about once a year. Twice a year, that's about it. And when he's there, I say hello, he says hello. There's nothing else between us, nothing else at all. I just know that he could turn this country around. I've been in the business long enough to know that it takes charisma as well as ideas to change the course of a nation. Look at what this charismatic left-wing fanatic has done to this country and the world. And look at what this charismatic left-wing phony Obama is about to do to the world by giving Iran a bomb. Take a look at what's going to happen. So, you know, my next big book is called Government Zero, No Borders, No Language, No Culture. And I hope after it comes out and establishes itself as a document in this nation, Trump becomes president the following year, and we can change the title to whoever writes the book, because I'm not writing anymore after that. It'll be a dog book after that, and maybe a book on health. That's about it. I'm through. I've done my job. By the way, he said something interesting right at the beginning. He said that he's going to hire Carl Icahn as one of his negotiators. That, did you hear that on the show? I hadn't heard that on any other radio or television show. Now, for those of you who know about the legendary Carl Icahn, my God, would I love to have Carl Icahn sitting across the table from those wonderful friends of ours in China? And there's a lot more to be said for the government that Donald Trump would bring in. He'd strike down the Anchor Babies Law, point eight of the Savage Manifesto, eliminate the loophole in our law that encourages illegal immigrants to enter this country for the purpose of having anchor babies or U.S. citizens simply because they happen to have been born in our hospitals. That's point number eight of my 37-point plan. I'm the architect of much of what you're hearing from conservatives today. Whether they admit it or not doesn't matter to me. Whether they even know it came from my book doesn't matter to me. All I know is that their script writers have read my work. And I wrote this 37-point Savage Manifesto. English only, close the borders, defend the borders, defund and repeal Obamacare, reduce the size and scope of government, liquidate TARP, oil for illegals, strike down Anchor Babies Law, export jailed illegal aliens. Point 11, Michael Savage, use profiling to prevent terror attacks. So, you know, you say, am I being specific enough or am I just a bombastic radio host? Well, you can have it any way you want. If you want to paint me as a bombastic radio host who is an ignoramus, you can do that. But if you dare take the time to read any of my books, my most recent is Stop the Coming Civil War. I'm reading now from Trickle Up Poverty. My next book will be Government Zero. You will see the greatest mind of our generation in the history of politics sitting right before this microphone. And I'm going to say it because no one else will. It's that simple. Do I get the credit for that? Has anyone ever said that? I am the man that everyone's copied in this business, everyone. And I give you specifics in my books. I generalize on the radio, I'll admit it. The radio's a different medium than the written word. You have to use a different rhetoric on the radio than in the written word. You have to speak in broad strokes on the radio to keep the audience listening. To communicate with a mass audience, you use a different language structure. It's very complicated, very complicated difference between the written word and the spoken word, which is why when a person reads something, even from their own books, which I have done, it comes across wrong on radio. I can hear it. I've got the ears that can hear what sounds right and what sounds wrong from my own voice. If I read from my own books, it doesn't sound right on the radio because it doesn't sound clean. It doesn't read correctly. The syntax is wrong. So anyway, you know, you can get what you want out of me. You want to paint me as one thing, you can do so, but you'd be wrong. You want to really understand me? You really want to understand my genius? Then you read my books. Until then, keep your mouth shut, because you're just showing your own ignorance. You're not showing your intelligence by shooting your mouth off and saying Michael Savage is this, Michael Savage is that, when you either never read one of my books or never heard one of my shows. Gigantic, federalized police force reporting to Al Sharpton. Can you imagine? You say it can't happen here? Well, my friends, wake up. It happened while you were here. Now let's go to my time in America. This would never have happened in my time when I was a kid. If a cop was shot in New York City when I was a boy, the entire city would come to a halt. And at the time, there were, what, 20 or 30,000 police? Every cop, whether they were off duty or on duty, would be called in, and there'd be an around-the-clock manhunt. And moreover, the underworld would put their own resources to finding that cop killer, because they understood that it was very bad for business. And so even the underworld, the criminals, work with the cops to get the cop killer. The criminals, the real criminals or the real criminal organizations, never, ever shot a cop. And when they did find him, let me tell you something. There was no bleeding heart lawyer from NYU or Columbia telling us about the bad childhood the cop killer had. Let me tell you something else. If we don't go back to the times that I lived in, there'll be no times for you to live in at all. Michael Savage wrote Stop the Coming Civil War a year ago. I warned you that Obama had an intention, and he has conducted a civil war against all civil aspects of this society from the day he seized power. From the day he was foisted upon us by forces we will never, ever comprehend, this man has had a vendetta against the institutions that have made this nation great. And one of the institutions that stands in the way of his total and complete takeover of this nation are the local police forces in the country. He has already decapitated the military, which is why they're not fighting ISIS. There's some grumbling down below the colonel level from those who say we could have knocked ISIS out in a week. But no one's asking questions in the media, are they, Mr. Roger Ailes, as to why the President of the United States is not taking down ISIS, not yet a subject on the great Fox News network. I dismiss all the other networks because they were dismissed by the American people of a thinking nature a long time ago. But the last link that we had of any hope was the Fox News network, until it was destroyed completely in the recent past by a new management and a new management style. It is now the CNN of our time. They will not ask the real questions, which is, why is there a war on the police? Did Obama's rhetoric have anything to do with it? Why is ISIS still functioning? Why is the U.S. military never, ever, ever been given the targets of the training camps to attack? The U.S. Air Force could eliminate these training camps in a very, very short period of time, killing everybody in them or destroying them so they're useless. We even know where the camps are. I saw a map of them the other day. And yet your president, the commander-in-chief, will not offer a strike against them. I see it as clear as a bell. There is no doubt in my mind that this is an orchestrated war against the police that was triggered by the man in the White House. And I'm not asking anyone to agree or disagree. That is my opinion. It's that simple. I don't need any confirmation for what I see to be real. How do you like that? I'm not going to pretend that I really don't know what's going on and I need your opinion. I don't really need your opinion. I understand exactly what happened. I know that this maniac wants this to happen. Oh, I don't mean actually kill police. I know he gave some heartfelt statement last night about, let's see, which cop killing was that one? Oh, the one in Texas, that's right. When that white cop was shot in the back of the head by a black man. Yeah, I think even Obama had to come up from the ice cream and give a speech on that one. Well, now he's up in Alaska renaming mountains for political purposes. You understand what he's doing up there, don't you? He's a community organizer. He's organizing the Inuits who don't vote to make sure that they vote for a Democrat, socialist, Islamist from here on into the future. Do you understand what he's doing? He's agitating in Alaska. And so, again, here we are. Cops are dead. Another one dead. All because of the individuals I mentioned. I wake up today saying I'm not going to do it again. And then I wake up to this. Manhunt underway north of Chicago for three suspects in the murder of a police officer. Armed gunman. Traffic stop. Shot him. Stole his gun. Stole his gear and ran into the woods. No pictures yet of any of them. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they look like. They're described as two white males and one black male, but further than that, we don't know. Let's hope that there was some body cameras or helmet cameras in that department, which will show who they are. And now there's a manhunt for the killers of another cop. And the reason there's open season on cops is because of the war on police that was started by Barack Obama. Eric Holder, who was then Attorney General and now is enjoying a multi-million dollar a year reward for his great work as a lawyer. Al Sharpton, the street thug, turned national political hero by Obama. And others who have called for a war on police. So criminals are no longer afraid of police for two reasons. They know that the police are intimidated by the vermin lawyers from NYU and Columbia who will put a policeman in jail for doing his job. You see, the new rule in America is the cop is hesitating, and as you well know, if you hesitate with a bad guy, you're going to lose. That simple. Well, that's exactly what Obama and Holder and Sharpton, de Blasio and others have wanted. And now there's a war on police who are reluctant to draw their gun, reluctant to take down a criminal for fear of a lawsuit by the vermin rats in the ACLU, all of whom should be deported and all of their assets seized, in my opinion. But you ought to thank God I'm only a talk show host with very strong and loud opinions. You ought to thank God I have no power in this country, because the first thing I would do is decouple the ACLU from the legal system. That is the first thing that needs to be done. Decouple these communist rats from the legal system. Were they ever elected? Did you ever go to a polling place? And were you given an option to vote for these communist anti-American vermin, these anti-Christian lawyers? These anti-American lawyers, have you ever been given that option? And yet they're more powerful than the Supreme Court in determining which way this nation goes. One of the first things I would do is I would immediately indict them for various crimes and let them defend themselves. That's the first thing I would do. But I'm not a presidential candidate. I'm only a talk show host. It's one man's opinion. Never forget that. So Obama's up in Alaska renaming mountains and putting out the fraudulent information about global warming in order to push that lie. I'll give you a little evidence to that effect if you're a doubter about what I'm saying to you. He's up there talking about global warming and how the world's coming to an end, melting sea ice and this and that. And at the same time, story on CNN says Obama wants new Coast Guard icebreakers in the Arctic. So I scratched my head and said, wait a minute, if all the ice is melting because of global warming, I thought, why does their dear leader, need new icebreakers? Because he's a liar. That's all, a liar and a fraud. It's as simple as that. See, the United States once had seven icebreakers in its fleet. But now because the military has been downsized and deballed, it has only two icebreakers that are functional. Russia has 40 icebreakers, with 11 more planned under construction. So, Presidente will call on Congress to approve funding for replacing a new heavy icebreaker by 2020. Now, what does he need icebreakers for? They're designed to cut through open water ice and are in high demand as industries push closer to exploration of either of the Earth's poles, according to the Coast Guard. So, in other words, the glaciers are melting. They're going to disappear. They, animals are going to all die, but they need icebreakers anyway. Which one is true, Mr. Obama? The answer is, can you ever get the truth out of a skilled liar, a rhetorician like him? But let's go back to the war on police, which he triggered, in order to make certain that police resign, police are intimidated, his thugs are empowered in the streets. Do you understand how dangerous this is for you, the average citizen? I was recently in New York, 2 weeks ago, and on the surface, New York is a beautiful city. But right under the surface, there is a menacing presence that can be felt by anyone who has a nervous system. Right under the surface, there are the guys with the cups, shaking the cups in your face. Right outside Central Park, right inside Central Park, up and down 7th Avenue. They're shaking the cups, but I guarantee you they have a box cutter inside their coat. And I guarantee you they'll cut your purse right off your body or cut the wallet right out of your pants if they sense that you're weak and that you have something of value. It's a jungle that is kept in check only by the police, the thin blue line, which de Blasio has attacked repeatedly along with his leftist cohorts. And you know, there are consequences to rhetoric. The consequences now are dead police. But now we go back to the war on police. And the reason Obama wants a war on police is so evident to anyone with the ability to reason that I'll lay it out for you if you can't think. And it's as simple as this. He wants to show how bad the police are against minorities. You see, most of the police in America are white, and that's a crime to Barack Obama. You understand that. He has a racial lens on his iris, and he can only see things through a racial lens. It's worked for him. If you read his own autobiography, he said he really didn't have a racial consciousness when he was a young biracial man in Hawaii. He never thought about it. And then something happened after being a pot-smoking, wayward youth in Pepperdine University, I believe, when he was an ordinary American kid, not political, he said, in his own autobiography. He went to Columbia University, a once-great university, which has become a cesspool of anti-Americanism. And at Columbia University, he joined in with the communists, the white commies and the black radicals, and he grew his hair out. He said his own words now, I'm not making anything up. And he said he noticed something happened. People were suddenly paying attention to him in a different way. And look where it got him. Just look how far it got him. It worked for him. Now, if you were him, would you stop the rhetoric of your youth if it's made you the president of the United States? What would have you stop it? It doesn't matter how many countries die or how many people die. All that matters is that you're having a grand old narcissistic time. And on that note, I'll take a break. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Let me go from the war on police being conducted by the federal government and their liberal cohorts. Another cop was shot dead. I want to read you some of the stories and headlines on MichaelSavage.com. Donald Trump on Savage Show, which is a picture of myself and Mr. Trump, and of course my dog Teddy. I say of course, because he's always with me wherever he can be. And it's a great picture. Next one says 59% back Trump on deportation of illegals. Really, that's shocking. Now, here's an interesting story I stumbled upon. Virginia environmentalist follows in Soros and buys into beleaguered fossil fuel. Another phony. Another billionaire environmentalist who made a fortune in another field is now buying bankrupt St. Louis-based Patriot Coal for $400 million following a major investment in coal by the billionaire liberal activist George Soros. So they ran the price of coal down by running coal out of America, and then they ran in and scooped up the coal companies. Here is a tragically horrendous story. Murder of elderly couple in Sicily fuels Italy's growing anti-immigrant sentiment from the London Telegraph. And take a guess who slit the throats of this elderly couple in Sicily. They were pensioners. They had worked all their lives in Germany in a Mercedes plant. They went home to live out the few years they had left in Sicily. An 18-year-old African migrant from the Ivory Coast, who was in Italy only a short period of time, allegedly slit the throat of Vincenzo Solano, 68, and then attacked his wife, Mercedes Ibanez, 70. Mrs. Ibanez fell to her death from a second-floor balcony as she ran away from the robbers. The murderer, or the alleged murderer, the African asylum seeker from the Ivory Coast, Mr. Kamara, is one of thousands of illegal aliens and refugees living at nearby Mineo in southeastern Sicily. They're arriving by boat from Libya. And I'll just rest my case right there. I ran into a young Sicilian young man a few months ago working in a restaurant that my friend owns in San Francisco. And I asked him, why did you leave Sicily? Your family is there. Don't you miss? He said, I miss my family and friends very much. He said, but there's no work for me in Sicily. They're giving whatever little work there is to illegal aliens from Africa. I said, who's giving them the jobs? He said, the liberals in Sicily. I said, liberals in Sicily? He said, yes. The liberals in Sicily have taken over the government. So what's left? More than 100,000 refugees have arrived by boat in Italy this year. Can you, anyone listening to this show tell me that Europe will survive another 20 years? Can anyone listening to the show tell me that Europe will be a civilized place in 20 years? Can anyone listening to the show tell me there will be new art of the magnitude that Europe is world famous for? Or will Europe descend into chaos and become another third world hellhole, all a result of the liberalism that has plagued and infected the entire Western world? Gianluca Bonanno with the Northern League, a staunchly anti-immigrant party of the right, says Italians fear for their lives inside their own homes. And he said, this is Renzi's national security strategy. What kind of country are we living in? We can ask the same question about Obama. What kind of country are we living in when we have no national security strategy? When he is flooding America with illegal aliens and refusing to take the war to the enemy called ISIS. A relative told La Stampa newspaper the murdered couple had returned from living in Germany to enjoy their retirement in Sicily. They shouldn't have died like this, slaughtered like goats. And there, my friends, is the face of Europe under the EU thugs operating in a bubble. Also on michaelsavage.com is a picture of myself with a new hat, new suit, new shirt, new smile with my new book, Government Zero, which will not be out until October. I wish we could move it up, because it's my most important and my last nonfiction book. It follows Stop the Coming Civil War. The subtitle says it all, no borders, no language, no culture. But if it was just a repeat of what I had written before, I wouldn't have written it. And I don't want to go into it now because it's too soon, but I would recommend this. If you're a collector of Michael Savage's books and you want to get this last nonfiction book and you want a first printing of it, buy it now on Amazon or one of the other sites where it can be available, because if they sell out the first printing, it'll be a second printing.
Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Now, of course, you may remember there was a young lady named Steinle, who was shot in cold blood by an illegal immigrant a few months ago with a gun he claims he found under a bench. That's not been followed up by the city fathers or city mothers or the city transgendered, whoever runs the city. It's hard to tell. The bums are out of control. Crime is out of control. After the story of the homeless infestation, there's another story out of San Francisco on the crookedest street in San Francisco, known to everyone as the windingest street, known as Lombard Street. No crime. Two guys pull up in a car, grab a camera from a tourist from Thailand, and then shoot him in the shoulder when the Thai tourist ran after them. In the middle of the day, the robbers, undescribed, jumped into a red sedan and sped away. But an officer spotted the getaway vehicle driving onto the San Francisco Bay Bridge and gave chase. CHP officers, hats off to them, nabbed one of the suspects and recovered a gun as they stopped in a rental neighborhood in the Oakland area. The other robber took off running when he was cornered by members of the SF Police Department Tactical Division and an Emeryville Police Canine Unit. Now, we do not know if these gentlemen were doing so because of any grievances, but we do know that San Francisco has now become virtually uninhabitable because of the bums crapping in the street, because of the robbery and the crime that's being covered up. And I don't blame the police. I blame liberalism. Liberalism is a mental disorder, and wherever super liberals take over, the cities go to the toilet bowl. Look at New York. You take your life in your hands, walking around with the folks with the box cutters underneath the cup, the shaking cup. I want to talk about the bums in San Francisco. Now, you know the city for its Golden Gate Bridge, the mixture of cultures and races, the beautiful fog, and mainly the bums, the out-of-control bums who came into the city mainly during the hippie era. They urinate in your face now. They've been doing this for a long time, but it's gotten real bad under the new mayor, Mayor Ed Lee, the worst mayor in the history of San Francisco, has brought about a crime wave unseen in the city's history. In other words, what you call homeless. The word homeless itself is a fabrication of the radical left. Because so far as I know, there is no biblical... Let's talk about the Constitution, not the Bible. Can anyone show me where in the Bible it says I owe a bum a house? Show me where it says I owe them a house. What I owe them is a jail cell or a mental hospital. That's the only housing that they're entitled to. So the bums are now so brazen because the cops have been neutralized by the liberals that they're literally openly defecating and peeing in the streets in front of people. How did we get here? What would you do to end the scourge, the pandemic of the bums in the streets? Well, let's start with who put them in the streets. I have an article that I researched for you from 1984 from the New York Times, if you could believe it, when the New York Times was still a newspaper of note. This article by Richard Lyons is entitled, How Release of Mental Patients Began. The policy that led to the release of most of the nation's mentally ill patients from the hospital to the community is now widely regarded as a major failure, he wrote, 1984. Sweeping critiques of the policy, notably the recent report of the American Psychiatric Association, have spread the blame everywhere, faulting politicians, civil libertarian lawyers, and psychiatrists. But who specifically played some of the more important roles in the formation of this ill-fated policy? What motivated these influential people and what lessons are to be learned? This is all from 1984. In California, for example, the number of patients in state mental hospitals reached a peak of 37,000 in 1959 when Edmund G. Brown was governor. It fell to 22,000 when Ronald Reagan attained that office in 1967 and continued to decline under his administration and that of his successor, Edmund G. Brown, Jr. The senior Mr. Brown now expresses regret about the way the policy started and ultimately evolved. They've gone far too far in letting people out, he said in an interview. Dr. Robert H. Felix, who was then director of the National Institute of Mental Health and a major figure in the shift to community centers, says, quote, on reflection, many of those patients who left the state hospitals should never have done so. We psychiatrists saw too much of the old snake pit, saw too many people who shouldn't have been there, and we overreacted. The result is not what we intended, and perhaps we didn't ask the questions that should have been asked when developing a new concept, but psychiatrists are human too, and we tried our damnedest, close quote. Dr. John A. Talbot, president of the American Psychiatric Association, said, remember that, is in 1984, the psychiatrists involved in the policy making at the time certainly oversold community treatment, and our credibility today is probably damaged because of it. He said the policies were based partly on wishful thinking, partly on the enormousness of the problem, and the lack of a silver bullet to resolve it then as now. I'll go on. Do you know how to solve the problem? We have a problem. The psychiatrists made a mistake. The liberal lawyers made a mistake. They released people from nut houses onto the streets. They have now metastasized into whole armies of bums who are destroying our civility and our way of life. How would you solve this problem? It's a simple question, and there are simple answers. It's not that complicated. You have to ignore the homeless advocates because they're nothing but troublemakers, like the illegal alien advocates who are in it for the money. They're like George Ramos of the homeless. It's that simple. What would you do to stop it? How would you solve the homeless infestation? There are answers ranging from the liberal answer, which is build them all houses, and you well know what would happen if you gave every bum a house or an apartment. They would destroy it. They would destroy it within 30 days. They would become uninhabitable cesspools. The other side says, lock them up, put them in a mental hospital. Now, I want to talk about that side of it. As you well know, most of the homeless bums are mentally ill or overt criminals hiding from the law. I've known this for years. They're extremely dangerous as a population. Not all, but many of them are extremely dangerous criminals hiding out as homeless. The other class are mentally ill who belong in mental hospitals. But Governor Jerry Brown's father, Governor Edmund Pat Brown, closed the state mental hospitals by law. And then when Ronald Reagan became governor, he had to follow the law, and he went ahead and followed Edmund Pat Brown's law and closed the mental hospitals. As a result, people who would normally be locked up for doing things along the lines of crapping in the street, urinating in the street, spitting on people, etc., breaking windows, would be arrested. They would be considered mentally incompetent, and they'd be put in a place where they can get the care that they need, which is a mental hospital. But all the mental hospitals were closed. Now, I have said we should reopen the mental hospitals. I've said this as far as 15 years ago on the Savage Nation. What solution do you have for the out-of-control infestation of bums in the United States of America? There is a solution. Not every country on earth is plagued by bums. Countries that are plagued by liberal politicians are plagued by bums. Countries which are run by sane individuals are not plagued by bums. And so I ask you what you would do as a citizen of the United States of America if you were asked to advise the leadership of the country how to get rid of the homeless infestation in San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Washington, D.C. It's perhaps per capita worse in my hometown of San Francisco. Now, I got to tell you something. I moved here in 1974, and I was charmed by the city. I thought it was gorgeous. When I came back from New York, I couldn't wait to get into San Francisco. And so I went into the city. As you know, I have multiple dwellings. I move around for obvious reasons. I'm not in the same place for many nights in a row. I move around from one to the other. I have done this for years. I did not stay more than 30 minutes until I fled out of San Francisco. Nothing happened overtly to me. There was a feeling in San Francisco of filth and disorder and an undertone of violence that had me leave the city almost immediately, far worse than in New York. This city is a city that easily deceives you, and you could see it in the architecture of the city. There was a joke that went around when I first moved here in 74 and was looking for a house. I had a realtor who drove me around. He was a very funny guy. He was a nice gay guy. And he said, oh, in this city, what we have is called a Queen Anne front and a Mary Ann behind. Well, I laughed hysterically. That's San Francisco to a T. It's a Queen Anne front and a Mary Ann behind. And the facade has crumbled a long time ago. The stucco has come off the facade. The city is now nakedly exposed for what it is. It's not a charming city of I left my heart and said, bring the flowers in your hair at all. It's disgusting. And what we need is a strike force. First, we need the FBI to come in and get to the bottom of the corruption. It is the most corrupt city in the United States of America. And by the way, you know and I know there are billions of dollars being stolen out of this state on a daily basis. High-speed railroad to nowhere. That's on a state level. The streets are broken. Go and try to drive on Lombard Street going to the Golden Gate Bridge. Ask yourself where the highway funds went. Go and look at the approach to the Golden Gate Bridge and see if you can ride on it without an SUV with snow tires, without damaging your wheels. We have roads in San Francisco that are an embarrassment to the world. Malaysia has better roads than we have here, and yet billions of dollars are spent. Where do the billions of dollars go? Where are the highway funds? No one has an answer for that. But what would you do with the bums? That's what I'm asking you. Let's use common sense. There is nothing in the Constitution that says we are required to give a person who is either lazy or, let's say, mentally incompetent a house. Certainly we don't want to hurt them, so we put them in institutions. And we used to have institutions. They were called mental hospitals, where they were given meals, they were given a clean bed, they were given showers. But most importantly, they were supervised to keep them under control, because society at large cannot supervise the number of people that are now roaming the streets who call themselves homeless. They shake a cup at you, and if you don't give them what they want, they threaten you, or they insult your wife, they insult your daughter. It's out of control. And now they're openly defecating and urinating in the streets of San Francisco. And of course, we have a crime wave in San Francisco that the old city fathers, mothers, or transgenders who run it don't want you to know about. The mayor is interested only in, let us say, fiscal matters. San Francisco, as you well know, is the toilet bowl of America. That gussies itself up as something special. It really isn't something special. It's something quite other than special in many ways. I live here because I love the weather. I love the wildlife. I despise the politics of the Bay Area. It's almost unlivable. And now, of course, as they say, chickens have come home to roost with the crime wave that's sweeping the city, the illegal alien hordes that have taken over the city who are walking around brazenly like Jorge Ramos on steroids. By the way, speaking of Jorge Ramos, his daughter works for the Hillary campaign. Did anyone say that yet on radio today? I doubt it. Mr. Ramos, who thinks he's the savior of the illegal alien, or actually the leader of the illegal alien communities in America, but he got humiliated when he tried to speak out of turn at a Trump press conference. He was put in this place. But it turns out that Ramos is not really just interested in this from the point of view of let us say, ethical reasons, moral reasons, racial reasons. It's financial. His daughter works for the Hillary Clinton campaign. Jorge Ramos, the amnesty activist, moonlights as a Univision and Fusion journalist. He revealed in June that his daughter is an employee of the Hillary Clinton campaign. And yet he calls himself a journalist. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. But since the bums are now crapping in the street like dogs, San Francisco has become not the laughing stock of the world, but the toilet bowl of the world. The one I want to lead with, the picture of a bum crapping in the streets of San Francisco openly as though it's a toilet. The fact is that the city is out of control because liberalism is a mental disorder. It cannot manage anything for one primary reason. Liberalism runs on the premise of tolerance. Everyone says, well, what's wrong with tolerance, Michael Savage? Aren't we supposed to be tolerant of others? Yes, we are. But ultra-tolerance is what is destroying the United States of America. We are ultra-tolerant of the bums. We are ultra-tolerant of the drug addicts. We're ultra-tolerant of on an international level, the worst terrorist the world has seen since Adolf Hitler, called ISIS. Why are we so tolerant of the rapes, the murders, and the kidnappings on an international level? Barack Obama is very tolerant of ISIS and has no tolerance for the American people who voted out all of his left-wing fanatical policies. So I open it up to you. What would you do with them? How would you get rid of the homeless bums in the United States of America in a humane way? What would you do with this scourge? If, let's say Donald Trump becomes president, we hope he cleans up the country. Well, hope he becomes president, but he's not going to clean up every problem in the country overnight. But that's a separate issue. And you're the advisor. You're now the special advisor on homelessness in America. Of course, the word homeless was an invention of the liberal community itself. That implies that they're entitled to a home. No, they're entitled to a cot in a mental hospital, or a cot in the jail cell. That's about what they're entitled to. They're not entitled to a home. And the proof is they cannot manage themselves in a home. If you see them in a home, they usually destroy what they're given. They will not care for themselves because they don't want to or they can't. Isn't it interesting, by the way, that most of the illegal aliens are not living in the streets? Has anyone noticed that? Raise your hand if you've noticed that most of the bums in the streets of America are not from Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, or China. Have you noticed that they're native peoples, meaning indigenous peoples of several different races, but they're not from the illegal alien population? Does anyone know why? Raise your hand if you can tell us, and George Jorge Ramos, why America's streets, which are flooded with the homeless bums, don't seem to have any illegal aliens in the gutters. Does anyone know why? I'll give you an answer. Because the illegal aliens are coddled. They have so many social services given to them that they've gone to the head of the line. They are taken care of better than our own poor and unfortunate. Did you know that? That's another little issue, and it's tied to the illegal aliens. The illegal alien issue, rather, is tied to the homeless issue. They're tied together. Again, simple observation from a man who observes Real Life 101, because I walk in the streets. Amongst the bums who are panhandling, the aggressive bums, the defecators, the urinators, the ones who curse you if you don't give them money, I almost have never seen an illegal alien, ever. They're all our own. They're all citizens of this country. So why are the illegal aliens not in the streets? Because they're well taken care of. By the way, I talk about this at length in my forthcoming book, Government Zero. I have to mention it because I try to make my books different than most. My books are not Democrat, Republican, Republican, Democrat, Democrat, Republican, and George Washington's false teeth. Government Zero covers this issue very, very clearly, and you can only find it online right now for an advanced copy. It's like psychologists. Okay, the personality expert, Dr. Adam Perkins, okay, some expert, from King's College London said, we're still a long way off from fully explaining neuroticism. Neuroticism? Neuroticism? Neuroticism. I like the last part of that word. But we hope our new theory will help people make sense of their own experiences and show that although being highly neurotic is by definition unpleasant, It also has creative benefits. Let me explain something to you. As a highly creative man myself, someone who's been writing since I'm a young boy, someone who's been drawing since I'm a young boy, someone who has published numerous books and has many unpublished plays and stories and poems, someone who's been writing and working all my life in the creative world, they're 100% wrong. Let me explain this, and I'll have to explain it in a little more detail, but I'm going to give you the short version now, the Savage Notes version. I remember when I was 18 years old and I was very worried about my highly sensitive brain and highly sensitive nature and how high I was flying with it and how close I got to the sun. I got very worried, and I stumbled upon something. I don't know whether it was Aldous Huxley who wrote it, who wrote that we create despite our neurosis, not because of our neurosis. This is the exact opposite of the truth. Because if you want to feed into your highly creative nature and say, well, it's because I'm highly nervous, highly neurotic, whatever you want to call it, that I can create, what you will do is you will fuel that neuroticism, coffee, cigarettes, drugs, alcohol, sexual addiction, in order to thinking that you're going to make yourself more creative. It's the exact opposite of the truth. What I read that saved me, and I'm telling this to all the young people out there who think that by being wild and crazy, you're going to create more. No, you're going to kill yourself, and your creativity will come to gibberish. The opposite is true. We create despite our neuroticism, not because of it. As one of the most creative people in the United States of America, which I am, whether or not people agree with it, is highly irrelevant. The body of work speaks for itself. And I don't have to sell myself to you. I know what I have done, and I know what I have, and I also know what's going to be coming out over the next few years, some maybe even after I'm not here. And so the thing is, the opposite is true. They say support for the idea that neuroticism is associated with creativity has come from brain scan studies highlighting neural circuits that regulate self-generated thought. So that sounds very serious, right? It says a panic button in the amygdala, a key emotional center in the brain, is believed to trigger an inappropriate fear response after perceived threats are conjured up in the brain's prefrontal cortex. High scorers on neuroticism have a highly active imagination, which acts as a built-in threat generator, says Dr. Perkins. Now, as I said to you, it's very attractive to believe this, but I think the exact opposite conclusion can be derived from the same observations, because as I think it was Huxley, pretty sure Aldous Huxley wrote it, or it could have been Laura Archera Huxley, his wife, wrote it, that highly creative people function despite their neurosis, not because of their neurosis. And that's one of the most liberating thoughts you could ever have in your life. Because I've known people who are creative who fed their neuroses thinking they'd be more creative, and they acted out being creative. You've seen the pseudo-artist, the poseur. You've seen them. You've seen the acts they go through to make themselves jumpy and crazy and wild. And most of those types are called poseurs, and they come to nothing. The really great artists that I have met, and I met only a few in my life, are very stable, very, very middle-class-looking individuals, incidentally. Those who show you how creative they are, whether it's through their look or their behavior, are usually fakers, what the French call poseurs. So the bottom line here is that if you're a younger person and you're trying to figure out how to act, which you all, everyone's doing, if you're trying to figure out how to act, by the way, you're not alone. Everyone's trying to figure out how to act. When you get older, you don't have to figure it out anymore. It's too late already. Your act is over. But the thing is, you don't have to ape being creative if you're creative. Just be creative. Just do your work. You don't have to show people how brilliant you are with your outfits and your this, green hair and a nose ring and an eye ring. It's unnecessary. It's just to show you're wild when you're really not. Or tattoos on your eyelid. The fact is that as soon as you get a little older, you'll want the tattoos and the rings removed and then get back to work. The real media machine behind Trump, conservative talk radio, says BuzzFeed. Now, it sounds like they're thanking us, but they're not. They're spanking us. Who Rosie Gray is, we don't know. I don't know Rosie Gray from Rosie O'Donnell, but we know Rosie O'Donnell hates Trump. So I can only assume that her distant cousin, Rosie Gray, also hates Trump. So BuzzFeed, which is a left-wing hit, or I don't know what it is really, and I heard of it, I don't know what it does, says the real media machine behind Trump is conservative talk radio. And the article opens like this. It says, I'm for Trump, conservative talk radio host Michael Savage told listeners last month point blank, best choice we have. So then they go on and says the symbiotic relationship between Donald Trump and cable news is well established. But what's gotten less attention this summer beyond frustrated conservative circles online is another media engine driving Trump, good old-fashioned talk radio. For weeks, some of the biggest names in conservative talk radio, like Michael Savage, have praised Trump and his bashing of the politically correct left and Republican establishment. But the conservative talkers are also pushing his rhetoric on immigration and his vow to revoke birthright citizenship for the children of undocumented immigrants and delivering the content straight to their millions of listeners. Well, let me straighten you out, Rosie. I don't know when you were born. You were probably born after 1994 when I started the radio. But my first book covered this subject, published in 1995. And that's my first political book, Rosie. I wrote many books before that, Rosie, in the field of health. But the fact of the matter is, we're not pushing Trump's rhetoric on immigration. Trump is pushing America's rhetoric on immigration, Rosie. You see, again, they're doing a propaganda piece here. And they're trying to say that we're doing this just for ratings. Now, we really don't believe it, no. They're the only ones who believe anything. Only the left believes in their agenda. We on the conservative side, we don't believe in anything we say. It's just for ratings. That's all it is. That's all it is. Rick Wilson, an unknown hack, a so-called Republican strategist. I never heard of him. No one knows who he is. He probably makes $14,000 a year and has to sub in McDonald's somewhere. But that would make him a Republican strategist who has come under attack from fellow conservatives. Why does she lump the word Republican with conservative together when they're not one and the same thing? Again, propaganda. He said that he thought conservative talk radio's focus on Trump is a ploy to please listeners and keep them tuned in. The conservative media is more crowded than ever with sources of information. And though they still command large audiences, talkers don't have the same kind of hegemony they once did. All right, you get the picture. We don't really mean it. Only the left is sincere. And Trump has invented the whole issue of illegal immigration. Then, I'm not going to read the whole article. It says, Trump's embrace of hardline immigration ideas like ending birthright citizenship matches up perfectly with the policies that some of these hosts have been promoting for some time. Okay, good. So at least she gives credit where credit is due. Then he names two unknown talk show hosts who have seized on a quote by Senator Jacob Howard, the original sponsor of the citizenship clause, that they're using to bolster their case that the 14th Amendment doesn't guarantee citizenship to the children of people in the country illegally. Excuse me, the two unknown hosts got it from me, because if you remember, I read it to you straight out in New York. Remember when I was in New York? I hadn't heard it from anyone before. Okay, so the copycats got it from me, and now they're saying they invented it. It doesn't matter. The point is, the original senator who wrote the clause said it was never meant to grant citizenship to foreigners, in plain English. Come on. Whatever. And that's that story. Now we can move on. Me. Crazy time. Crazy time. There's Obama, never missing an opportunity to stir up the masses of hate and stir up race war in America. He goes to New Orleans and the anniversary of Katrina. Right away, I'm ready. The minority story again. This is after this minority went to a loony bin minority, shot up two and killed white people because of alleged racism. So the president, back from vacation with the billionaires, goes to New Orleans and right away start already the race and this, and the people don't have an opportunity, and they don't stop. No, they don't stop. Michael Savage newsletter from this week, we must reopen the mental hospitals to deal with the homeless. Now, for 3 days, I have been talking about the sad disgrace of the city I love so much, San Francisco. I am talking about the corruption, the outright robbery of the billions of dollars in federal and state grants. I am talking mainly about filth and the bums in the streets. I'm talking about the aggressive bums in the streets. I'm talking about bums defecating in the streets. I'm talking about bums urinating in the streets. I'm talking about tourists are saying it. I'm saying that they don't want me to talk about it. I've been told that the city fathers or the transgenders who run it, I don't know who, the transgenders who run the city do not want me talking about the bums in the streets. But even transgenders are assaulted by them. They don't like stepping on fecal matter. Nobody likes it, but nobody will stop this. And that's why I've been talking about opening up the mental hospitals. What did I want to say? Maybe I do want to go to the Caribbean for a week in September before the book comes out. And I have to start telling you why you should. Because you should understand that it's an important book. But I'm not ready for it. It's too soon. It's not Labor Day. And the school is back already. The brats are back in school already. Thank God. Thank God they're not in the streets getting into trouble. I'm glad they're back in school. What are they learning? What are they teaching them in school now? America is bad. Mother and father are bad. The church is evil. Let's see. White males stole the world and made it unsafe for minorities. Let's see what else they teach. The flag is an evil sign of oppression. Yeah, that's basically the teaching now because the psychotic vermin took over the schools as well as everything else. Be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. We're talking about creativity, neuroses. We're talking about super yachts, supermodels, that maniac who shoots that young reporter and the sound man in his twisted, sick mind, Mr. Victimhood marching around. Whatever anyone said to him, he took as a racial slur. If someone said to him in the radio station, God, they're really out in the field with that one, he thought they were referring to slavery. This guy was a nut. He fought with everyone, argued with everyone, that it'd remove him. And then this poor woman was killed as a result of this maniac not being put into a nut house. Michael Savage newsletter, we must reopen the mental hospitals to deal with the homeless. I still stand by that remark. Just come to San Francisco and go to City Hall. Both inside and out City Hall, you'll see the wisdom in what I just said. Judge blocks Obama EPA rule as federal power grab over state waters. I don't even understand that story. Those kinds of stories don't appeal to me. Let's see what I have. Bye-bye, Ronald. Obama's top labor arbiter dealt a blow to the franchise business. What else is new? Why should Obama's labor arbiter want anyone to have a franchise or a business? I said we have to find a way to keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill. Oh, did they go crazy. I happen to not be a fan of the NRA. I don't like Wayne LaPierre. I'll be very honest with you. I think that they're all greedy and they're in it for themselves. Now, up to a point, they do a good job, but like any other organization, it's all about the greenbacks for themselves. And don't put them on a pedestal. The founding fathers were different than you and I. Love those guys. Why the founding fathers were different than you and I. How were they different than you and I? They were not superhumans. They didn't come from another planet. They were slaveholders. They were piggish. Some of them were not piggish. And they created a country and they wrote some good documents. And by the way, the great founding fathers, for those of you who buy this malarkey, one of the first things they enacted after the American Revolution was putting together the biggest army that had ever been seen in America to put down the whiskey rebellion amongst farmers who didn't want to pay a tax on the whiskey they were making for themselves. There's your founding fathers view. So I'm tired of making people into what they aren't. We are all basically at a certain point the same. Some of us are far more intelligent than others. Some are stupider than others. Some are meaner than others. Some are more beautiful than others. But the thing is ultimately, at the end of the day, what are we? We're dust. We go back to dust. We start as a, well, I read the Bible on this. It's pretty ugly. They're depressed, those guys. You know, the prophets were all depressed when you think about it. If you look at Isaiah and those guys, man, they needed medication. They were so depressed. They were walking around ancient Israel at the time. Everyone else was having a good time. They had leather sandals on. They were slaughtering sheep. They were knocking off lamb for lunch. They were behaving like this super yacht guy. They were having as much sex as they could everywhere they wanted. So these guys hated it because they didn't have any of that. They were probably miserable and poor. So they wrote a book, God's going to punish you if you have too good at you will be cast into the fires of hell. How dare you enjoy yourself? Be like me, miserable and horrible. Walk around in misery, utter misery every second of your life. Wear ugly clothing, stutter if you have. That's what it comes down to. A lot of it's based on jealousy. Here's a little news for you. FBI A-team leading serious probe of Clinton's private email server. Yeah, right. They're really going to get to the bottom of it. Obama's FBI is going to get to the bottom of Clinton's violation of every law in the land. An FBI A-team is leading the extremely serious investigation into Hillary Clinton's server, with the focus including a provision of the law pertaining to gathering, transmitting, or losing defense information, an intelligence source tells Fox News. Right. Barack Obama, the most honest president in the history of the world, and the FBI, independent as you can ever imagine, is going to really pursue this to the ends of the earth to get to the truth. Right. Yeah, I have total faith in the FBI today. People like this topic, the creativity, neurotic thing. I knew it would trigger talk. Do you think I want to talk about Huma's emails and Hillary's lying and cheating and stealing to get where she is and wants to do 8 more years of it? Do you think I want to talk about things like that? Do you think I really want to read the news that did Hillary Clinton know the emails on the server were classified? You see how far Fox is moving to the left? They're already parsing it for Hillary Clinton. They attacked Trump. Martha Washington is finished. I don't care whether her ratings are good. She has no credibility whatsoever. Zero. Megyn Kelly has zero credibility. I don't care if her ratings go through the ceiling. She's just another beauty contestant of Roger Ailes. They built a whole network based upon legs and lipstick. What are you kidding? Doesn't mean they're stupid, but it's legs and lipstick. Compare them to Wolf Blitzer. Who would you watch?